This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
We're just waiting for a few other people to trickle in. And in the meantime, all of you are requested to please mute yourselves if you're having any technical difficulties with respect to audio. If you are having any difficulties with respect to audio, you will not be able to hear me say this. So if our course coordinator can please put that in the chat. A lot of you have not connected to your audio. I would also request that at least for this webinar, you may keep your videos off. In the subsequent course, of course, we would prefer that your videos are on. Right now, this is going to be short and sweet. I don't know if it's going to be sweet, to be honest, but let's see. Okay. All right. So I think, if people can please confirm in the chat box, if everything is checking out with respect to audio, you can hear me fine, you can see me fine. Please keep yourselves muted. Course coordinator, if you can change the settings such that whoever enters into the meeting is automatically muted. Okay. So I am beginning. We have a sufficient number of people in. So we have 1 hour today. This webinar is going to span for an hour. In the first 40 minutes or so, I'm going to give you an introduction talking about the importance of the subject. Why is it that we're carrying this webinar or this course actually out? Why is understanding love important? So hopefully by the end of the session today, you will have understood something of the significance if there is still a question mark in your head with respect to its significance and importance to you, your personal lives, and society in general as well. So that's one thing I'm going to do. I'm going to follow that up with an outline of the course itself. What am I going to be talking about within this entire course? Of course, I'm not going to be alone. I will have help from my team, from guest speakers. What is our overall plan, which of course, like human beings, is subject to change if and when warranted. And that'll be that. If you have any particular questions after that, you will be invited to ask those questions. The questions that arise in the middle of my talk, you are requested to note those down with you or send them to the course coordinator. Please do not post the questions in the chat. Send them to the course coordinator. He will accumulate them and give them to me when the Q&A time comes. Again, this format is only for the webinar today. The way the course is going to proceed, the format that the course is going to follow is going to be something completely different. Okay, so I hope that is all clear. Let me then begin with why love? Why love actually? Why this course? Why in the world are we doing this? Why are we putting all of you together, inviting you to join us on this little journey to understand love? The first of our reasons for doing so is clinical. At the end of the day, and I'm sorry, I should have started with introducing myself. I'm a clinician, I'm a psychiatrist. Before anything else, I am a psychiatrist. Okay, so my professional experience training is all in the field of psychiatry. My academic training includes, of course, the vaster field of psychology. So I'm currently pursuing my PhD in psychology at the University of West Georgia and here in the United States. And I have a diploma in Franklin logotherapy. So that's to give you a very brief background. Other than that, of course, I am a part of Telepsychiatry Pakistan, which is our initiative to carry the understandings that we have of psychiatry, of psychology, of logotherapy, of coaching to as many people as we possibly can in Pakistan, around Pakistan, with the help of the team that we have of coaches, consultants, and administrative team. Okay, so that's the basic introduction. I will tie in what we do with the intent of the webinar as we move on. Now, why this particular course? Why are we doing this? Typically, you will not find psychiatrists addressing these subjects, not publicly, at least, right? You will not find clinicians having these seminars with the general public talking about these problems. And quite honestly, I find that as a neglect of responsibility, a neglect of a duty that we owe as psychiatrists to the community at large. If I were to round up my clinical practice, all the people that I see, all the people who present to me with their problems, with their stories, and if I were forced to reduce all of the problems to one common origin, then I would say it is the inability to form relationships. It is an inability to be loved, or to love, actually. Right? So I would reduce it down to love and relationships. If I was forced to reduce it down, pick out one problem that leads to all of what you see in your clinical practice, I would reduce it down to love. That's as simple as I can possibly make it. Yes, I'm reducing things. Yes, I'm neglecting a lot of other important factors as well. But I will not find that significance, that importance in any other factor as much as I would find in the understanding of love. To give you an example. Okay, so this is a story. It is a completely made up story and completely true at the same time. I am putting together four or five of my patients that I've seen together, cut pasted a lot of their details so that they are not identifiable. But I can tell you this much, that this is recurring. These five are the patterns that I will see repeatedly, and most of my colleagues will see repeatedly in our practice, to illustrate again the importance of the subject of love. Now, this family, let's say, okay, so it's one family, husband and wife. Husband is hard worker, put them anywhere in the world. Put them in the United States, put them in Europe, Pakistan, India, wherever you want to put them, standard couple. Okay, hardworking man, good, makes good money, provides for his family. Whenever the wife talks about him with this appreciation that he has provided well for me and my family. The wife, good educated lady, spent most of her life as a homemaker and worked part-time here and there, but for the most part, her concern were her children. Who are the children? And they have this, they have four children, let's say, okay? Let's say the guys, they're called Ed and Eddie, and the girls are called Ella and Ellie. Okay, I'm making up these random names, but again, these stories are as true as they possibly can get. These are repeated experiences in clinical practice. The husband and the wife are not mentally ill. They do not have any diagnosis. They are not depressed. They're not anxious. They don't have schizophrenia. They don't have obsessive compulsive disorder. They don't have any of what you associate pagalpan with. These are pagal people who go to pagal doctors, and you know, crazy people go to crazy doctors. No. They're completely normal, run-of-the-mill family, husband and wife, doing their duties, fulfilling their responsibilities. But their relationship with each other, it's not even conflicted. It is not, they don't fight all the time. They're not abusing each other, cursing each other, beating each other up in front of the kids. They're not doing any of that. They're not doing any of that. They have a decent, reasonable relationship. They talk to each other with respect to the kids, with respect to the household chores. They fulfill each other's responsibilities. Pretty much the run-of-the-mill stuff. Yes, as far as a lot of affection is concerned, a lot of, you know, being going out of your way, but that's not that much. The family has its usual get-togethers, dine-outs, nothing abnormal. From this family, the four children that we're talking about, who have seen love in a restricted way, being expressed between the parents and from the parents to themselves. And so they've expressed that love in, again, a restricted way to each other as well. No problems at all in their academics, for the most part, as they're growing up. Now let's see these children grow up one by one. Let's start with Ella, the first girl. Now Ella can be a Fatma, she can be a Maryam, she can be an Aisha, she can be whoever, whatever name you want to take. I'm just calling her Ella, so no one in particular here identifies with them as such. She grows old in this household, goes to school, does well in school. Right around her teenage, or late teenage, let's say, in her high school, she confronts these other girls who are very passionate about religion, about religiosity. Now, Ella's automatically attracted towards them. She sees that there is something there. She starts attending their gatherings and she's like, yes, I found it. My life has a purpose. My life has an aim. And she becomes this, what we call ultra religious, very committed, very dedicated, practicing person, practicing in terms of her religiosity. She has this passion for God, for the work of God, and she says she's going to live this life forever, and she's found her bliss. And she was this, there was this something missing in her life, this gap, this vacuum, which has now been fulfilled. Okay. Ellie, that was Ella, okay? Ellie, however, sees that her sister's ultra-conservative, ultra-religious habits are not seen so fondly by her parents. They sort of isolate her from the other normal people in society. She doesn't want to do all of that stuff. She's younger. So what she does is she does what everyone else does. The way the wind blows in her school, she follows along. She chit-chats with her friends, goes out with them, gossips, movies, entertainment, you know, the whole shebang. She likes guys and interacts with them and has a couple of flings as she's going up, and she's perfectly fine about it and she's enjoying it. It's like, this is the way a normal person should be growing up. That's Ella. These are the two sisters, Ella and Ellie. Ellie was the, you know, the normal, quote unquote, and Ella was the ultra religious. Let's get to the boys. The boys are Ed and Eddie, okay? Now, Ed and Eddie, as they're growing old, they become teenagers as well. Right around the middle of their teenage, Ed falls head over heels in love with this incredibly beautiful, drop dead gorgeous girl from school. And he's like, this is it. I have found my perfect someone, my soulmate. My life has found its ultimate meaning. We were meant to be together. We are one body, two souls, or two bodies, one soul. Two bodies, one soul. That's what it said. Okay, so that's who we are. And he's committed. He's dedicated. He loves her like anything. And he just, that's his life. He's going to love her till he dies, and they're going to raise a beautiful family together and what have you. Eddie, that was Ed. Eddie, on the other hand, does not find the love of his life at 16 years of age. He finds friends who are into drugs. Eddie's like, one of his friends like, just give it a try. He gives it a try. One thing leads to another. Before he knows it, the whole shebang, hash, heroin, all of that is coming into the mix. All of that is coming into the mix. So these are the four kids. First, found religion. I'm not saying specifically which religion. At least I tried not to. Second is going with the flow, following the fashion, everything that everybody else does. Third, boy finds the love of his life. Fourth, again, boy finds drugs. The really religious, the ultra religious girl grows up, becomes a woman like everybody else in the society. She has to get married. Now, as she gets into that relationship and she's married, she marries. Why? Because her parents want her to get married. Religiously, it is recommended that she gets married. So socially, it's appropriate for her to get married. So she gets married. Does she have any romantic feelings for her husband? Not really. Is she interested in talking to her husband prior to marriage? Of course not. She would consider that completely out of the question. She gets married, and lo and behold, on her marriage night, she finds herself to be incredibly anxious. She had that anxiety thinking about the intimacy, the sexuality in marriage before as well, but she always brushed it aside. Has she ever had any sort of sex education from her parents, what she should not do? Not really. The topic was too much of a taboo for a standard family to ever converse about. She considered herself to be not concerned with these things. And since she had found religion, whatever she knew was religious do's and don'ts. And that was pretty much it. Now, she freezes up and cannot respond to her now married, the husband that she's married to, his advances. She doesn't know what to do. He, on the other hand, seeing her response, finds himself to be inadequate. And the marriage is not consummated. Not on the first night, not for the first week. Again, true story, not for 4 years. True story that repeats itself. And they're too embarrassed, both husband and wife, to ever talk about it to anyone else. And because of their difficulties, because of their sexual difficulties with each other, they're emotionally distant as well. People ask, why don't you have kids? They brush the subject aside. They refer it to fate. They shy away. They don't want to have that conversation. Eventually, our ultra religious Ella decides that, you know, she needs to do some sort of work, because sitting at home, not really enjoying a great space with her husband, she is finding it really difficult. And, you know, she's religious and she's practicing all her tenets of her religiosity as she ought to, but there is more that she needs. So she joins work. She's working with, at this company with her colleagues. Time comes for some sort of an exam that the company expects its employees to take. She's studying for this exam with another colleague who happens to be a guy. They're put together. Now, she's emotionally distant from her husband. Days go by, and they hardly exchange a couple of lines with each other, pretty much, and they've made their peace with it. It's been so bad with respect to the intimacy that they have stopped trying. Every now and then they have this conversation, maybe we should see a professional, maybe we should talk to someone, but it's always brushed under the carpet. So she, with this new work colleague with whom she's preparing for an exam, starts sharing some of her difficulties. You know, how she's a little upset. He empathizes, he emotionally connects. Lo and behold, this ultra-religious person who was never able to consummate her marriage with her husband ends up losing her virginity to this gentleman at work who was emotionally available to her for her. So the very morality that she wanted to hold on to for so long, or that the society wanted her to hold on to in her teenage, in her adulthood, because of its, you know, the taboo of sexuality and all, she ends up losing that, not when she's single, but when she's actually married. Okay? That's Ella for us. Now, of course, when particular Ella in question appeared to me in therapy, there was the divorce was on the table. It had almost happened. And the new guy was also not an option. Anyway, I'm not going into the details of that story anymore. Again, not one story, repeated multiple times. These are only the ones that reach me and my colleagues. There's so many that don't. Let's turn to, who do we want to turn to? Let's turn to one of the guys now. Let's talk about Ed. Okay, so that was Ella's story. Now I'm going to talk about Ed's story. So Ed, if you remember, fell in love with this gorgeous, incredibly beautiful girl when he was 16, 17. Prior to this, you know, he was into gaming, he loved me, friends, studies, all of that stuff, the usual. But this time, it just flipped his world. He knew he found it. He would wake up with butterflies in his stomach and looking forward on his phone all the time, waiting for her to respond. He would say hi, and then his eyes would be glued to the screen. When is she gonna say hello? And she was the first person he would text when he would wake up. She was the last person he spoke to before he went to sleep. And she loved him. He loved her, she loved him. All was going great. Everything was going perfectly. Until he sees her talking to, again, true story. True stories mashed into one. Sees her talking to this other guy. He's like, no, this is nothing. He thinks about confronting him. He's like, no, maybe I shouldn't. It's just in my head. It's not nothing serious. The next day he goes, he's a little late for school than usual, university, let's say. Now by this time they're in university. And she's hanging out with that guy again. And she's being all giggly. And he's like, what the hell? She laughs at my jokes. Why is she laughing at his? And they're sitting a little too close than she should with him, according to his understanding. And what the hell? So he decides to confront her. And she's dumbstruck. She's like, how dare you accuse me? How could you even think that I would do something like that? Who the hell do you think you are? And he's like, I'm sorry, you know, it's just this and that. And he tries to make up for it. He's upset her. He appeases her. He does the whole shebang, the romance, the gifts, the flowers, apologizes. The thing is forgotten for a week before he finds out that she actually is cheating on him. Checks her phone. Messages, pictures, inappropriate stuff, according to him, that she owed only to him and not to the other guy. He's heartbroken. He is downright suicidal. He thinks life is not worth living anymore. The one person, her, that he trusted, that he put his entire, everything about his life was planned around her. She betrayed him. He's like, what the hell? So again, all the different people whose stories this is, some of them before coming to me or any of my colleagues had attempted one form of suicide or another, right? One way or another of trying to kill themselves. Some had locked themselves up, not talking to anyone, completely withdrawn. University almost kicked them out. They're not attending classes. All of that stuff happened. Okay. Again, multiple stories matched into one. His conclusion after that, all these women are the same. They are not to be trusted. I'd rather not be in a relationship with any of them. If ever I do get married, it would only be to fulfill my sexual cravings, and she would have to be subservient to me and live under my shoe, so to speak. He became distant from his sisters, started, at one point they enjoyed a pretty decent, reasonable relationship, but he became aversive towards them as well. They're also women. All these women are the same. And again, I've heard this story from the perspective of the mothers and the sisters, because this particular guy will not seek help either, unless he's forced to. Okay, so that was the guy. Let's turn to, we spoke about Ella. Let's talk about, who was the other girl, Ellie? Yeah, so Ellie, the other sister, was like, doesn't want to be that ultra conservative religious sister that the elder sister was. So she's like, let me just fool around a little bit. She fools around. She has some fun. She goes out with this guy. You know, she's 6 months later, doesn't work out. She's like, it's okay, no problem. People have breakups. I'll move on. She moves on. She finds somebody else. And it just so happens, as she's moving around, making friends, one of these guys she seriously falls for. She also, like Ed, thinks he's the one. He's this real charming person that she's always wanted to be with. She's like, he's perfect. Eventually, as the relationship moves on, she's like, hang on. This guy's a misogynist. This guy, all he wants, after you've gotten over the charm and the romantic times, all he wants to do is treat me like a slave. There's no freedom that I'm going to get in this relationship for my career, for my dreams. All he wants is for me to marry him, work if he wants me to work, not work if he doesn't want me to work, bear him some children, cook his food, and he does whatever the hell he wants to. I am not in any way allowing such a person to rule me. They have fights, they have arguments, she confronts him on all of these misogynist issues. He calls her a feminist. She's like, go to hell. And eventually it doesn't work out. The pattern repeats itself. And she's like, you know what? I'm okay alone. I don't want anybody at all. I'm just gonna develop my career on my own, get a dog or a cat, and I'll live the life I want to. Him and all men who are dogs can go to hell, but not the type of dogs that I want to, you know, actual real dogs. I would prefer those to these men. That's the third story. The fourth kid, we left him in drugs. Well, he's still in drugs. That's the end of that story. That is the end of that story. And I'd say these are exceptions. I'd say these are, you know, few and far between. But just in Pakistan, there are 24 million people estimated to have clinically severe conditions that require professional help. These four people that I told you about are spread out in those 24 million, and then there's many others who will not have diagnosable conditions, not justifying a prescription, but still unwell, still emotionally, socially experiencing incredible difficulties, making life work. The family was a pretty normal family. They were a pretty standard family. I started off with this. They're not abusive. They are not, they're providing for the basic needs. But as far as the love dimension is concerned, there is a lot of confusion there. There is a lot that is left begging. So this is what brings us here. That if we're talking about building a true community, we cannot talk about building a true community if we don't talk about building relationships, if we don't talk about love. Any of these four people, they go to their workplaces, they go to their universities, they go to their religious gatherings even. Do we expect them to be performing at their best, giving it their all, to have passion for what it is that they're engaged in? That's going to be incredibly difficult. To be really working towards the development of the society, the betterment of humanity, is that what we should expect from all the experiences that they've experienced? I haven't even gone to the point of where a lot of them are developing pedophilic tendencies. A lot of them are caught up in or have experienced child sexual abuse. How does that twist their understanding of love at a very young age? We haven't even talked about that. We haven't even talked about people who are, and rest assured, that's not a minority. Every fifth girl child will have experienced something like that. Those are global, Eastern, Western, doesn't matter there. Global statistics. We're not even talking about those. We're not even talking about those who are physically abused by the people that they love or thought they loved or thought who loved them. Those two are not a minority. That's a considerable population of people. People who develop psychiatric diagnosable conditions in their adulthood, 50% of them have started experiencing their problems as children. A good 3/4 of them, 75% of them, have had their first episodes or first diagnosable psychiatric condition before the age of 24. What in the world are we doing? And as mental health professionals, do we have anything intelligent, anything practical, anything understandable to offer the general public so as to prevent these conditions from developing? I am yet to see any. Very few and far between. We want to stay locked up in our clinics and what have you. Maybe it's Ed in the clinic. I don't know. Ed is not going to make a good psychiatrist. Because for all the reasons that their story is depicting to us. Okay, so this is the predicament. This is where all of this is coming from. We can't produce 10,000 psychiatrists in the next couple of years for Pakistan, but we can do something with respect to, okay, let's learn to talk about love. Oh no, I already know everything. That's exactly what each of those four stories that I told you, those four siblings, each of them thinks they know exactly what it is, what love is. Each of them. Their parents think they know perfectly what the subject is. I, for one, I'm going to start with this admission. I don't know perfectly what love is. Let's be very clear on that. I'm not going to be as definitive as all six of them are. That's the first mistake that we make, which is why we don't learn anything. For our part, I hope the way I want to conduct this course, the material that I want to deliver to you, it develops as we're talking. It becomes better. It becomes more informed. The mistakes are corrected in the process. So the second time we deliver this, the third time we deliver this, it is different. So essentially, we need to be cognizant of the incompleteness of what it is that we're offering. Okay, so very quickly, I'm going to move on to the outline as to how the course is going to proceed if you choose to enroll for it. But before that, a couple of disclaimers. Can this course change your life? Yes, it can. Will this course change your life? For a lot of you, it won't. For a lot of you, it won't. And all of us are going to be responsible for that. Me for not delivering it correctly, or me for the material that I have to deliver not being adequate. Quite a possibility. I'm not going to make any tall claims as this is the best thing you're ever find in the world and da 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 da. Yes, it has worked for a lot of people whose lives have changed, but it hasn't worked for a lot of others. For the most part, your concern needs to be the defenses that you bring in, and you will bring in a lot of defenses because the content that we're going to be talking about is not going to be comfortable. It is going to be confrontational. It should be confrontational if it is looking to elicit some sort of change. If it is only confirming what you already know, what you're already doing, if it's also only reinforcing your comfort zone for you, then I'm wasting your time and you're wasting your time with me. So don't expect for it to be all pretty. And when your defenses are challenged, when they are put under the microscope and you feel called out, although I'm not going to be calling out anyone, you're going to hate me. And you're going to hate the course. Some of you will. Some of you are going to hate yourselves. A lot of that has happened in the past, so I'm putting it out there. A lot of you will drop out for whatever reason. Right now, a lot of you are listening to this with a lot of parallel windows open on the side. You will be attending the course in that way. Just give me whatever you want to give me in the lecture, the reflections, I'm not going to do the exercises, I'm not going to do. I don't have time. Fair enough. Fair enough. So I'm not giving any ironclad guarantees. There's going to be a lot of variables here. But yes, I am going to give the best of whatever it is that I know from my knowledge, from my experience, whatever our team can put together for you. And when you have difficulty following whatever it is that I'm saying in any way, then we will have ways of making up for it. There's something you don't understand and you ask, we will try our best to explain. But if you never ask, then there isn't much that we can do. There isn't much that we can do. Okay. Very quickly, the course outline, if I may share my screen. Hang on. Okay, so very quickly put together outline. I hope all of you can see this. Let me know if you can. Let me know if you cannot. Quick overview. This is Love Actually. First of all, I'm going to start off. Our first session is most likely going to be an orientation session. Essentially, what that is going to be is you're going to introduce yourselves. I'm going to give a longer introduction to myself, perhaps, and what we do here at TelePsych. And you're going to then put in some of your questions or agendas that you want us to cover. If there is something that is already there, it's fine. If not, then we're going to add that to the course material. Again, it's going to go on for 3 months, right? Every Sunday, 2 hours. There's a lot of what I'm putting on here, but then there's what you tell me you want that needs to be addressed. If it isn't covered under any of the headings, then we'll bring it out as a new topic altogether. Orientation is what we start off with. Then we go on to what you see on your screen over here, what love is not. That all of those misunderstandings, the myths associated with love, I've given them various titles to facilitate understanding. Again, I'm going to try to keep the academic jargon as minimal as possible. Sometimes I might throw it out there just so you know that, you know, I do know that stuff when you start doubting me. But for the most part, the effort, the attempt is to keep it as intelligible as using as much commonplace knowledge, vocabulary, experiences, as make it as relatable as possible. Okay, so fish love, teddy love, mullah love, what are those types of love? We're going to talk about those, get an understanding of those, and then keep coming back to them as we're talking about what love is. We're going to have my teacher and mentor, Dr. Basak Kaushal, give a visiting guest lecture on the subject. He's going to focus in particularly on Allama Iqbal. Again, but sticking with the theme, individual people, practical, our day-to-day relationships. What can we get from there? What can we understand from there? We're not going to try to make it all that philosophical, impractical, unrelatable, difficult to understand for you. Then we go on to what love is. And there I'm going to be talking about the different stages of love, which you see in front of your screen. Do din shauke phir kutte bhonkte. That's typically a statement that is used in Urdu to talk about not just marriages, typically marriages, but that can also be extrapolated to other relationships as well, that it's incredible for a brief, what we call the honeymoon period, but then it gets pretty bad, okay, or pretty ordinary. So we're going to address that. We're going to talk about the various stages of love, what their characteristics are, try to identify do's and don'ts within those stages and find your orientation there. Then we're going to talk about, again, carrying this conversation forward. What does it really mean when you say, I love you? There's a fine print associated with it, what you usually don't talk about, that you're taking on the responsibility of the other person in so many more ways than you thought. Of these ways is a lot of brokenness that each individual brings into a relationship necessarily. Nobody enters into a relationship completely mature, absolutely healthy, perfect in all respects. They may be doing their academics and their jobs and, you know, interacting pretty amicably with people. Fair enough. Maybe they don't have a lot of personal distress and depression and anxiety, all of that. But that does not mean that there is no brokenness inside. For the most part, the brokenness manifests itself in the most intimate relationships, right? So there is a lot of jinns that you are going to confront, a lot of demons of the other person's personality that you have to confront most intimately in a relationship. And if you're not aware of that, then they're going to literally possess you and you're going to have a tough time. Whoever thinks they don't have any personal demons, they don't have any darkness in their personality, they are the first people who need this, who need to be apprised of this. Of course, there's most explicitly within this dynamic, within these demons, these dynamics that we carry from our childhood, our teenage, our experiences with our parents into our mature adult relationships. Whether those relationships turn into marriages or not, regardless, there's a very strong tendency of carrying our parental dynamic into our relationship dynamic, right? So in the fine print, there's a lot of navigation around this that is necessary. Then we're going to talk about setting up a base camp, very useful analogy that Scott Peck uses with respect to what a relationship should look like. In this, Sonier is to emphasize the importance of communication. We have heard this term a lot. How can I serve from an empty cup? He doesn't love me. How can I love him? Or she doesn't love me. How does she expect me to love him? And a lot of you will have heard the five love languages, heard of them or read about them. I'm going to talk about those as well, their utility and also the difficulty that the concept comes in with, right? Then we're going to talk about the couple, whether it's husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is, as one entity, as one unit. What does that mean? Is person A person B? Yes, but AB, has that identity been established, right? And if that identity is established, where's the individual space in that? So again, we're going to talk about that as well in one of our sessions. Communication difficulties, being misunderstood. I never said that. Yes, you did. I know what you said better than you know yourself. All of that comes in when conversations turn to one member or one individual in the couple justifying themselves. And they start with, I am not an angel, but, and then whatever happens after the but is where the real story is coming in. I am not an angel part is completely ignored. I am no saint, but. And then after the but is where the real conversation or the real communication is taking place. Jokes in relationships, where do they stand? How do we place them? What are the different ways we can look at them? Then what is the importance of faking it till you make it within relationships? We hear this a lot. I am very genuine. I cannot be a hypocrite. I am only going to do what I genuinely feel like doing in my heart. Fir ho gaya toda kaam. We're going to turn around to, the different aspects of it. Simplistic statements really don't do it. We're going to talk about meaning in a relationship. What does it mean to have meaning in a relationship? And if you don't have meaning, if the relationship does not have a meaning, individual can have meaning. Individual A has meaning, individual B has meaning, but the relationship doesn't have meaning. Then what vacuum does that leave? And what consequences can that have? Okay, and then what is the role of ideology? How it plays itself out in relationships? Apni roti khud pakao, all men are dogs. All women are feminists, ideologies clashing from both sides. You're a misogynist, you're a sexist, you are a feminist, you are androgynist, is that what it is? So there's all of these being flung at each other. You're too irreligious for me, you're too religious, you're an extremist, you're a terrorist, da, 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 da. What does that do to a relationship? Okay, so moving right along, we're going to talk about necessarily the importance of sexuality in a relationship. This almost turned when we started talking about what course do we want to launch first of all the different courses that we can and want to do. We wanted to make the first one entirely about sexuality, right? For, again, reasons that I alluded to a little bit in the very beginning in the stories that I told, but inadequately. There is so much more that can be said as to how this is not addressed the way it needs to be addressed, how appropriately it needs to be addressed. It never finds that attention, and the results are before us that every individual in society experiences in one way or the other. But then because we can't talk about it, we just don't talk about it. Or we go to that auntie on YouTube who is, telling you how you're going to get physically ill because you masturbate, and then whatever follows as a result of that. So we're going to address sexuality in considerable detail with due regard, of course, to keeping it as appropriate. Nevertheless, not beating around the bush, getting the message across that needs to be put across. So we will talk about that. Bonus materials, I'm not sure about the first one. I might end up doing it. I may not, talking about an analysis of Par Channade and how that fits into whatever we talk about. We will talk about religion and spirituality relationships. Again, you don't have to attend that if you don't want to, but there are people who take their religion very seriously, their spirituality very seriously, and necessarily it does have an impact in your relationship. Surprisingly, when you don't take your religion and spirituality seriously, that too has an impact. That in itself is a factor in relationships. We will have those conversations as well. Then specifically for married people, up until now, whatever it is that I've spoken of applies across the board. Married or unmarried, we can, of course, there will be specific differences, but more or less, these are generalizables that we're going to talk about. Okay, but then there are specific issues that married people have that we will address as well. For example, kyunki saas bhi kabhi bahu thi, bahu, not bahu, bahu. I'm sorry, that was I don't know if it was a Freudian slip or what, but in any case, that needs to be talked about seriously, as messed as possible. And then we're going to talk about children and parenting briefly. We may not be able to talk about it in as much detail as I'd like for us to, but at least give you something as the principles that we've discussed, how they extend to parenting. So that's what we end with. I think I have, as always, gone over time. If you have questions, please feel free to put them forward. And course coordinators, telepsych team, if you guys think if I have left anything out, please do let me know, and we can let everybody know. Okay. Course coordinator, whatever message you've sent me, I cannot see it. It is a blank gray screen. Find another way of sending it to me. Please put your questions forward to us, and we can see however many questions we can address in the time that we have left. Okay, so you're very welcome. The way you can attend the sessions is that you're going to be, a link is going to be shared with you, where you can register for the course. Yeah, I like it too. That's why I put it there. Danke. Hang on, what do you say to danke? Willkommen, I guess. Okay, willkommen. This course is not only about marriages. I tried clarifying that, that this is not only about marriages for the most part. It is going to be general, applies to relationships across the board, premarital and marital, hopefully not extramarital. But yeah, that's, there will be a specific section on or for married people, right? Which is going to do with in-laws and parenting and all of that. We will have that separately. For the most part, the rest of the lectures, and they're going to be lectures, yes, but discussions as well, they're going to be generalizable for across people across the board, married or not. Okay, so that's that. And let me look at the questions that you've all sent. Please do send your questions to course coordinator. If you send it to me here, I might miss out. Okay, for the first question, should we expect to find love after this course? We might get aware about love, but the problem is how to find someone who is equally or at least aware of love in our direction is difficult. This causes disappointment when it comes to love. I hear you. It is quite a challenge, quite a problem. Matrimonial services aren't exactly the perfect route that we'd want for them to be. The traditional, parents getting their children engaged when they were kids obviously doesn't happen anymore, marrying into the family. And then there's other ways that become complicated. So we do not provide good matches, at least not deliberately. If you end up finding somewhere here, not my business, all right? I ain't taking no responsibility for that. That is not what we wanted to do. But if it ends up happening, hey, what can we say? All right, but if you want us to start a matrimonial service as well, then I will just respond to that by saying ki meri 10 ungliyan aur 12 bijli ke surakhon mein maine guzari hui hai. There is nothing more that we can possibly take. Myself and every one of my team, we're pretty much plugged out here. Okay, so that's the best I can say for that, but I do understand that is a valid concern. Finding love and where to find love, important enough that it's not a part of my outline, but if you guys want to talk about it, we can have a completely dedicated discussion on that. Again, like I said, this outline is not final in the sense that whatever you want that needs to be addressed that you don't find in there, you let us know. And if I think it's going to fit into a one heading or the other, I'll let you know about that. If not, it's going to become a separate topic in and of itself. Okay. Right. Second question. Please feel free to leave. Those of you who are on a schedule, my apologies for going overboard. But again, I'm probably going to, we're going to start on time, a couple of minutes late usually, because we have to wait for people to come in. I'm going to be here on time, inshallah. But yeah, I might overextend sometimes. But if you guys don't want me to do that, we can talk about it. In our orientation session, we'll lay all of these things out. We'll come to a consensus. Your input will matter. And we will try to do whatever we can to accommodate. Next question, what should be our first priority? Self-love or loving the spouse? Okay. Wrong question. And as to why that's our wrong question, that question in itself is setting us up for a lot of problems. Just the way it's framed. Just the way it's framed, one is excluding the possibility of the other. And yes, there are instances in which that has to be the case, but if that is considered to be the overall situation, it becomes problematic. But again, not a question that I can answer without having delineated the aspects that, so many of the aspects that I laid out. So my apologies for an inadequate answer, but I can't answer this in one word, that this is priority or that is priority. It is going to be construed in very damaging ways. Okay, how can one get out of these abundance blocks? Even if you have tried again and again, your perception is not changed. I would say to that, if you have tried again and again, but the way you've tried hasn't changed, then that's a problem. If you're repeating the same effort in the same way, expecting different results, not the best way to go about it. That is precisely the point where you bring somebody else into the conversation and say, this is a problem. This is what I've done with it. It is not working. How do I get or achieve my goal? Or can I achieve my goal? You bring that conversation in so that other ways, if there is a conceptual problem, then that conceptual problem can be addressed. If there are ways that you did not think of, then those possibilities are spoken of. Or if whatever it is that you're pursuing is a wild goose chase to begin with, that needs to be identified as well. Okay. Right. In terms of romantic love, is it a healthy philosophy to simply bear the burden of your partner, especially if they're depressed and anxious clinically, and be patient with their meanness and unreasonableness and anger with the thought that Allah will reward the patients eventually? Or will that invariably cause resentment and crumble? Very, very loaded question. Very, very loaded question. See, within romantic love, whatever it is that we mean by that, bearing some burden of the other person is necessary. And yes, there is a consideration that you have to give to your capacity to bear that burden. There is a consideration that you have to give, okay, what can I do to increase my capacity to bear that burden? But to imagine that I can pop out of this particular relationship because the burden is too much to bear, and to expect that whatever subsequent relationship I am going to end up in is going to be that perfect relationship. And that's usually the fallacy in a lot of second, third relationships, or second, third marriages for that matter. You couldn't work it out in the first one or the second one. You completely put the burden on the other person, whether it's their depression or their anxiety or any other phenomena, whatever, their selfishness, their this, their that, something monstrous about them, that they're entirely demonized. And if it wasn't them, if it were somebody else, I would have my happily ever after. And you move into that second relationship or that second marriage, thinking that the first wife or the first girlfriend or boyfriend, everything was wrong with them. And lo and behold, what usually happens in the second relationship or second marriage? They end up being, the pattern repeats itself. The pattern repeats itself. The person changed, but the pattern did not. That means you brought that pattern with you, and the demonization of the other was so strong and powerful that you weren't able to see where you were lacking yourself or what you could have done differently. Again, there will be situations in which perhaps you don't have that capacity and you can't do differently. Fair enough. But is your situation that situation? I'd be very careful before answering that question for it's going to be different for every person. It is going to be different in every relationship. Okay, again, when you're exiting the relationship, especially a long-term relationship, when a person has invested quite a bit in you and you in them, you want to make sure that you've covered your bases, because that person is going to be gone, or you will not see them again, but the regret lives with you. That regret, which in the heat of things, in the anger of things, you never thought you would experience. But once the heat dies down and you're broken up or you're divorced, the regret comes swarming back. And then your subsequent relationships have to pay for it. Or you live with it on your own, not knowing what to do with it. Okay, so when exiting from a relationship, that now that you ask this question deserves a section on its own, you want to be very clear. I've done as much as you possibly can. I've done what I could. And you're never going to leave completely regret-free. You shouldn't leave completely regret-free from any relationship, but as much as is possible. If you are leaving 100% regret-free from a relationship, I'm very, very suspicious of that. There is something seriously wrong. There are a lot of strong, rigid defenses that are kicking in that are demonizing that other person completely. Notwithstanding that some people do deserve to be demonized entirely, that the majority of the fault at least does lie with them. But again, be very, very cautious before you draw that judgment or that conclusion. Sometimes parting ways is the best course, is the most loving course that you can take. Course of action, I mean, right? Loving, the most loving choice is to part ways. At times, the situation does warrant that. How does that make sense? Again, more details when the course starts. Premium version only. This is limited version. Okay, so. All of those questions that I did not get. Okay, now I have gotten those questions. Right. What if after taking this course, we end up having too high expectations? We already get backlash at home for being too high standards. So as far as I'm concerned, our entire team, we're very making a very deliberate and concerted effort into making sure that your expectations become real. That they are, that from that place of fantasy, they're brought to earth. And also from that place of pessimism and absolute, you know, lovelessness of nothing can ever happen for me, or it's an impossibility. we come back to Earth. So we would try, of course, we are going to fail in one way or the other for one person or another, but our effort is going to be to make it as balanced as we possibly can. But thank you for putting that out there. We are cognizant of this, and we will try our best that we don't raise your expectations too high, neither too low. But how do you tread that thin line? Let's see. Okay, so at times you do, by LDR, this question, the LDR question is incomplete. The sentence, the question finishes mid-sentence. If you can please resend that. No, I know LDR, they mean long distance relationship, that much I figured out, but the question finishes mid-sentence. At times you need counseling and know what? Okay, how to develop trust again in a relationship if it has gotten lost? Very good. Again, I feel embarrassed for saying that most of these questions I'd plan on answering in detail within the course itself. I can't give you pellets right now. But I will say this much, that trust is going to be threatened in every real relationship. Now we have to look at, was the expectation too high? Was the trust actually betrayed? What was done? And if you want, if you really, really push me into one size fit all kind of an answer, then my standard response is, if the person looking to regain your trust is showing you what they're going to do differently now than from what they failed, something to show their commitment and seriousness. Acknowledgement is there, of course, that's prerequisite number one. Following the acknowledgement, practically, how do they plan on being more trustworthy? If they're like, yes, I acknowledge it, I was at fault, I'm sorry. And if they have no clue or no willingness to find out practically what they're going to do differently, and they're like defensively telling you, either trust me or you don't, that's not a good sign. That is not a good sign. Okay. They should be willing to show what is it that they're going to do differently, or at least be willing to work that differently out with you or with a professional. Okay. Will there be a discussion about how to make love happen when there isn't, or how love can be reignited when it is extinguished? Yes, that's my favorite topic. I will talk about that. I wonder if you discussed the line between real love and toxic love, where you're just compromising your dreams and goals, like, fair enough, real love, toxic love. That will come up again and again, so I can tell you this much. Why are the people that need this course the most resistant to attend? And what can we do to change that? The best I can say is we cannot force people to attend or do anything, can we? We can have conversations with them. We can try to understand from where they're coming. And once they feel understood, that we have empathized with their position, with their situation, with their whatever reasons that they're giving for not attending. Maybe some of the reasons are genuine. Maybe they don't like me. Maybe they didn't have a good experience with me. Or for anyone else who delivers services like these or courses such as these, perhaps, I don't know. We would want to hear them out first. Make sure that they know that we've understood where they're coming from. And then after they feel understood, they know that we've understood them, then we look to respond. If we try to preach without all of that having happened, we're most likely going to have it flung in our faces. Number two, we are going to be the inspiration. If there are significant changes that people see in us after benefiting from this material, and it is palpable, that is the difference that I typically see in people who take what we have to offer seriously and make the requisite changes in their lives after having gone through the whole therapeutic process. Before you know it, you have the entire family in therapy. That's my cousin, and they want to come to you as well. And they saw me and they're like, oh my God, you're a different person altogether. Who is this? What is this? And then they're coming. And but if they don't see that, if they see you are where you were, only more frustrated and having, more content to criticize others, then that's going to be quite the disappointment. So understanding them and being that inspiration. If religion constricts us from enjoying halal relationships, I'm stuck in Ella's story. Okay. What we want emotional support from our partners more than physical support. I'm also pretty hung up. I was when I confronted Ella the first time and then the second. All the different versions of Ella's stories, they're pretty disturbing, aren't they? So when we talk about religion, spirituality, and relationship, that particular section that I delineated, we can have something of a reasonable conversation on this at that time. Maybe not definitive answers, but at least a conversation. Carry the discussion forward in some direction. Okay, can I get the course outline slides? Yeah, you sign up and you'll get a whole lot more than just the course outline. You'll get the course material, the course content, everything. Don't you worry. Okay. Other question, if religion, we already got this, didn't we? Oh, you reset the question, sorry. Is it necessary to be possessive about someone if you love that person? Possession and are two different things. I really look forward to answering all of these questions in detail, and I'm really sorry for not giving adequate answers right now, because I look at your question and I'm thinking, first we understand this, then we understand this, and then we understand third, and then it becomes, and then I get lost in that, and quick, short answer, I'm usually not good with that. So I know what this feels like, restricted version, redirecting you towards the premium version, but it is what it is. I can't really do anything else about it. The rest of the questions that you have, let's try to defer them to the actual course itself. Again, if they are covered in a heading that I've outlined, they will get addressed. If not, we'll make a separate heading, separate session. Those who sign up will get their answers, and in a lot of detail too at that. So I look forward to most of you being a part of it, what the course entails, what it offers, what it gives. The details have already been shared. You have further questions, please do feel free to reach out at the contact information provided. There's a WhatsApp number, there's an email address, course coordinator, if you can put that in here right now as well. Your questions can be answered over there. Thank you very much for attending today for this webinar. My apologies again for not being able to give more satisfactory answers that you were looking for and hiding those behind a paywall, unfortunately. If I could, it would be much different than this. But it is what it is. Thank you very much. And assalamu alaikum.